then another a participant to the conversation pitched in, saying, well, you know, and this is no surprise because collaborative systems like Wikipedia are characterized by what we call power law distributions, or using another term, by this 80-20 rule, right? 20% of the users contribute 80% of the content. And this goes all the way back to Pareto's observation that 80% of wealth in any given country belongs to 20% of the people. But basically, online environments are characterized by bias, by skewed distributions. Yeah, and this person gave examples of other online environments that are skewed in the same way. Again, I'm not going to read them. You can peruse this in your own leisure whenever you want. I'll share this with you. So what happens here? We took these figures very seriously, and there's been research since then that confirmed them. And basically, this intrigued us mightily. And so we wanted to figure out what exactly are we talking about when we're talking about Wikipedia as a social collaboration space. Are we talking about an elitist space? Are we talking about a space that is dominated by elites, where some individuals basically dominate the conversation? Are we talking about a situation of extreme inequality when we talk about collaboration on Wikipedia? Or are we talking about something slightly different? Again, I cannot and I will not reject the idea, and I will not try to reject the idea of inequality on Wikipedia. This is clearly there. But does that necessarily need to translate into elitism, into inequality in the same way in which we talk about inequality in the social and economic realm, right? Where some families and individuals, some countries dominate the economic life forever? Or are we talking about something else, about more dynamic inequality, where some individuals do certain things for a certain period of time and then fade away, and then other people come in and the process goes on and on and on? Are we talking about the more structured type of collaboration where there's exchanges between various groups? Now, just to bring this idea home a little bit more strongly about how unequal Wikipedia is, before I answer my question, what exactly does this mean, let me refer you to two very interesting articles. We have a little bit of feedback here. Well, should I do anything? Should I put this further away? So, before I answer the question I just raised, what exactly do we mean by this inequality, I just wanted to point you to two very interesting articles that highlight the present situation on Wikipedia. One is by Ortega and his collaborators, who in 2005 plotted the coefficient of inequality, the so-called Gini coefficient, which is the same coefficient economists and political scientists use when they want to show how unequal income distributions are in a society. And basically, the more unequal the distribution is, the higher the coefficient, right? And what they found was that, for example, for the English Wikipedia, for the first 4 or 5 years of its existence, the index of inequality sharply raised, right, after a period of variation, and sharply raised, and then it plateaued. It stayed constant, however, at the upper end. Yeah, so we had an increase of inequality, and then it kind of plateaued and stayed at the same level. Kind of. They did not go any further than this. They just said, this is what happens, and they stopped there. Another paper that came out a couple years ago by Kittur and his collaborators from Park. From Xerox Park, produced this very interesting pair of charts that display on the x-axis the various periods in time when they collected data, and on the y-axis, the percentage of edits on the left and words on the right contributed by users of various collaborative heft or weight, right? Users who have contributed throughout their career in red, less than 100 edits or words. Users in yellow who have contributed between 100 and 1,000, 1,000 and 5,000, the next blue shade, 5 to 10,000, the lighter blue shade, and 10,000 more, and the darkest blue shade, right? So what do we notice here? Just take a minute, because this is, you know, worth pondering. What do you think happens here? What do you notice? Yes, go ahead. Well, but as I mentioned, we have two charts here. One is one counts only number of edits, and that refers to what you taught. But the second one talks about number of words, right? The second one looks at how many words these people have contributed. And one thing that you notice, or I notice, is the fact that the power users, or whatever you want to call them, right, they have a constant share of about 30%, right, of words contributed, right? So people who have contributed 10,000 or more words, they have contributed 30% of the Wikipedia, you know, body of knowledge, so to speak. And then the 5 to 10 and one, and then in the everybody over 1,000, right? Those are about 60%. Now, if we count these people, the ones who contributed, you know, between 1,000 and the maximum amount, you'll see that they are just a fraction of the total number of users, right? So I put these two slides up, you know, again to kind of impress upon you how real these figures are, and you know, no matter how you slice or dice it, in the end you get to this basic truth that there is a very clear unequal distribution of content. Now, yes, I actually. Before I open up this Pandora's box.
No, it's not a question. Yeah. It's when you talk about change words and edits, about what namespaces are you talking about?
This is the main content.
Oh, the main
namespace, right? It's the articles.
Not talk space.
No. Now, these are not my papers. I'm just putting them up here to show you that there's a past, and you know, this what I'm coming up with all these figures I'm coming up with here. Triangulate with previous research. So, you know, putting these people behind, and you are free to peruse these papers too. I put the URLs at the end of the presentation. Let me talk about our approach. Now, we take this inequality for granted, but, you know, we want to problematize it a little bit. We want to look into it a little bit deeper. And our basic approach is this. This inequality reflects structuration. It reflects division of labor. It reflects the fact that Wikipedia is not just an anthill, regardless of the fact that anthills are not unstructured themselves. But, you know, what we're trying to say is that we have a very complex division of labor with various functions and roles played by various individuals who do different things in different ways, and thus the work allocation and the output allocation to each of these individuals will be different. Just like in any other organization, humans have known since they've banded together to hunt the proverbial mammoth, right? And the increase in inequality up to a certain point, we think that it could be explained by an increase in functional differentiation and specialization, and an emergence of an ever more complex division of labor. This is where we're coming from. And that this division of labor in the end makes Wikipedia resemble, although in a different way, and I'll explain what way, a bureaucracy, right? Let me first explain what I understand by a bureaucracy. I don't understand what Richard Stallman would understand, that evil, overpowering institution that's out there to get us and rob us of our fundamental rights. That's not where I'm getting at. I'm getting at the fact that, yeah, well, good luck. What I'm talking about is a bureaucracy is a structure, it's a social structure with roles and functions where individuals are allocated roles and functions above, based on some sort of common understanding of the members, and people discharge their activities based on these roles and functions. And these roles and functions might be hierarchically organized, and they are, and they're kind of, you know, inflexible. You know, you don't just, you know, change them the way you want. Now, saying this, I also want to bring in a caveat, namely that Wikipedia is not like, you know, General Motors. It's not just like Ford, okay, or AT&T, or Microsoft for that matter, in the sense that these roles, although well defined in the culture of the organization, are not tethered to specific individuals for all time. And these individuals are not there because there's somebody hired them or fired them or because they can defend that position on the basis of some sort of legal process up to a certain point. There are individuals who can defend their place there due to some legal process. And, you know, Jim Wells would be one of them, and many of the admins would be some of them. Now, what I'm talking about is, you know, everybody else who kind of stewards and shepherds articles, and these individuals are there because they want to be there, and they take it upon themselves to be there and stay there as long as they can put up with the process, which could be quite arduous, and then when they decided they cannot put up with it, they leave and they let other people come in. And in this respect, Wikipedia is more of an adhocracy than a bureaucracy. It's an ad hoc bureaucracy. Now, this being said, let's move on. And let's get to the main deliverable of this presentation today, which was supposed to be a little bit richer, but couldn't because of some technical issues that need to be addressed, and not by us, but by Wikipedia. But the main deliverable today is a way of measuring level of structuration, right? So if we believe that Wikipedia has become increasingly structured, well, then the natural question emerges, how do you measure structure? You know, what exactly are you talking about? And we are measuring structure using social entropy as an indicator. Now, entropy is a term you probably remember from your physics classes if you are humanities scholars, and if you are hard sciences scholars, you probably know it from your physics or information theory classes and all that kind of stuff. And basically, the entropy concept as such, it measures the level in pure physics of dispersion of states of elements in a system. It's, you know, how kind of random the system is. It also ties in with level of temperature of that system. And in information theory, which is where we're coming from, information entropy or social entropy, if you want, actually measures the reverse of that, right? It measures the degree to which elements in a system are not equally distributed through the possible states of the system. To what degree things are organized, basically. Entropy, according to Shannon, you know, it's actually can be twisted around to measure the level of information load in a system and the structure of the system in such a way that structure conveys to us a meaningful information. And a very quick example here that comes out of Shannon's work. You know, he said, and this is one of his greatest contributions to human knowledge. He said, you know, I give you a text of random letters, right, of letters and words. In this text, the occurrence of the letters or of the words will be random, right, because it's random, right? So A has no other reason to occur than chance alone and will occur just as frequently as B, Z, W, or X, right? And actually, just by looking at frequency of words, we can tell if a message is random or not. Now, how can you tell, however, if a message is increasingly organized? Well, he said, well, actually, we need to look at how frequent specific words or phrases or letters appear, and if those are biased, if those appear more frequently than chance alone would allow them to. And if you take any message in English, for example, you notice that, you know, a, the, as occurs, you know, a order of magnitude more frequently than other words, and the words a, e, and a couple, and the letters a, e, and a few others, again, occur much more frequently. So if we can measure, you know, how high the frequency of these things is, then you can decide if this is a meaningful message or not. Now, he went a step further than this, and he proposed this formula, which we adopted for our study. Said, actually, you know, if you take how many words you have in a message, for example, how many elements you have in a system, right? And if you calculate the share, right, the share of those words in the total output of communication that the system puts out, right? And then you multiply by that by a log function, you get a synthetic measure. You get a synthetic measure that will tell you how high or low the bias is in favor of specific elements in that system of communication. Well, I'm talking about communication here because this is what Shannon's been talking about, right? Now, in our situation, we took the contributions to the articles to be similar to occurrence of words in a message, right? So you have 1,000 people, right? Right. You have let's say you have 10 users making 100 contributions to a Wikipedia article, right? When each of these 10 users contributes 10 contributions, right? The situation is totally even and actually have a state of complete and blissful entropy, right? Now, when one user contributes everything and everybody else is just kind of sitting on the margin, they're just registered but didn't do anything, the level of entropy goes well way down. And here you have a system that is dominated by one user that basically it's kind of the big kahuna, right? And we have a minimum level of entropy. Now, in this paradigm, you can say that the first situation is the most unstructured, and the last one, the most structured, theoretically speaking. Now, this suffers some explanation because obviously when one person talks and everybody listens, that's not structured, that's tyranny, right? So it's not quite like that. But there's somewhere on this curve that we can describe a sweet spot, right? One distributions are kind of, you know, kind of neither nor, and you have various levels of structuration, individual level labor and all that. So, how does Wikipedia look like when you look at it from this perspective? And basically, we intended to analyze the whole Wikipedia dump from pages with their histories from 2008, December, and as you probably know, some of you who are in the know, those dumps don't work anymore, right? They are posted, but they are corrupted. And this is what happened to us. And we could only salvage 250,000 articles, 40,000 articles, and 800,000 users. We're very disappointed. We're still knocking at Wikipedia's doors. Knock, 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 knock. Please give us a dump that works. Please, I beg of you. I know that other people got them. Why not us too? I'm just kidding. But I know that the work's been done. And we hope that we'll be able to redo this exercise with the whole dump. But using, you know, this version of the dump, we got this next one. Now, what is this? Basically, on the x-axis, we have number of iterations. Now, number articles have been edited once, twice, three times, four times, so on and so forth, right? And at the zero point, we have all 240,000. Then, you know, as time goes, then articles kind of fall off because, you know, not all articles were edited 5,000 times or 10,000 times or whatever, 15,000 times, right? And on the y-axis, we have the entropy level, right? So basically, we aggregate the entropy levels for each article, right? And we create an average state of entropy for Wikipedia as a system at iteration 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, again, remember, these points in time are theoretical points in time based on number of edits, not on specific chronological dates. And what we see is what we saw before with the Gini coefficient, indeed, right? We see a period, you know, where entropy, and actually how do we read the y-axis? Y-axis indicates increase in entropy, right? An increase in entropy of destructuration, right? So we notice that we start from a point where entropy is almost zero because there's a very few number of collaborators doing quite a bit of work. But then you go way up because, you know, people start kind of working with it, but then it levels off, right? And it levels off, and this is really important, it levels off way under the theoretical wisdom of the crowd ceiling where entropy would be maximum. That's the dotted line at the top, right? So basically the red line is what we observe, is the mean level of entropy throughout the articles, and that's way down under the dotted line. Now what's the orange line? The orange line is the fitted line. You know, as you can see, the red line is surrounded by that gray band. That's the band of possible values for articles. You know, basically the mean has a standard deviation, a standard distribution, right? And you know, we can have articles anywhere between, you know, the top level of the gray band to the bottom level, right? And now if we take the observed values and the spread and we fit it along a curve, we get the orange curve, which is a theoretical curve. It's like a regression curve. And what's important about it is that that's still under the wisdom of the crowd ceiling. Now, this wouldn't be much because we've seen it in the Gini coefficient paper too, right? And you know, we'll just stop there and say, hey, well, this is cool. What's really interesting is this chart. What we did is in this chart, we logged the numbers on the y on the x-axis, such that instead of a curve, we get straight lines. And now we can compare the slope of the lines, right? We can compare the slope of the lines. And what we see here is really significant. Namely, that both the observed and the fit line, the green, the red and the orange lines, they diverge from the theoretical ceiling monotonously and continuously, right? So actually it's not just a leveling off process. Actually, although you don't see it on the simple chart, you know, when you do this operation, you see that actually the level of entropy continues to decrease, so to speak, right? Relatively speaking. Which means that in effect, Wikipedia continues to become structured and more complex. Now, if we had the full, complete data set, we would have been very, very happy to continue this research with the second part, which would have been to look at network structures of collaboration on these articles. Basically, we would have looked at how people collaborate on articles, and people who collaborate on an article would get the link between them. And when you have sufficient number of users and sufficient number of articles, you get the graph, right? Where, you know, the person contributes to the most articles has the most number of links to the other people. And there are network analytic tools that can tell you if a group defined in this way becomes more complex and the network structure is more complex, and you can generate a synthetic measure there. And we would have loved to compare that synthetic measure with the entropy measure and see if this absolutely theoretical value, which is entropy, converges with a more social graph theory measure. And if those two converge, right, if they follow the same curve and that curve kind of diverges from the wisdom of the crowd ceiling, then we probably can really tell that Wikipedia is a system that becomes more and more organized and more of an adhocracy. That being said, I think I ran out of time. I thank you very much, and I don't think we have time for questions now, but at the end. Okay, thank you very much.
The microphone is very loud, so if you can all hear me, then I'm going to speak a little softly. And if you can't hear me in there, then wave. I'm going to speak about the first official Wikipedia survey that the United Nations University did together with the Wikimedia Foundation. I'm going to try to remember to tell you when I'm switching my slides. It's a bit tricky sometimes as you're looking at your own screen. But the general idea here was that there's a growing area of research, and people are looking at all kinds of interesting aspects of Wikipedia and these kind of massive collaborative projects. And they're, in the case of Wikipedia, they're mostly using the log data, as in the examples I mentioned before. And there are some things that are difficult to investigate. Put it closer, okay? Okay. So there are some things that's good. No, it's not good here. So there are some things that are difficult to talk about and investigate with log data, and that are easier to look at if you have survey data, if you can ask the people you are researching their opinions on certain things and their backgrounds. And so that was the idea of the first official survey. The other thing that was quite unique here is that we know quite a lot about contributors because they leave traces in the database. We know relatively little about readers and users because they might be anonymous, they might never log in, and so it's difficult to get a feel for what kind of areas do they use, who are these people, what value do they get out of using Wikipedia. So the questionnaire was developed with community input and also looking at some of the existing research that was out there, because the idea was that if other people are interested in particular aspects and we can collect some data that is useful for them, then we should do that. The downside of this is that the questionnaire gets very, very long, which this questionnaire did get very long. It was also translated into 22 languages by the Wikipedia volunteer. I'm still on the first one, yeah. By the Wikipedia volunteer community. And we hosted it at, maybe I should say a one word or sentence about the United Nations University. It's not a normal university. It's a network of research institutions that focus on areas of particular interest to the United Nations organizations. So the idea was that the United Nations are interested in things like conflict and energy, and they would set up research institutes that focus on those relevant areas. And the one that I work for is called MERIT. It's based in the Netherlands, and it looks at the economics of technological change. So we hosted the survey at MERIT. The technical community of Wikipedia was kind enough to review it to make sure that there are no security holes in there. Went live in November last year. Basically, just by posting a small text link in the header of the 22 language editions that we had translated surveys for. And we staggered it because we were very concerned about the amount of traffic that might be coming from Wikipedia. Fortunately, there was no issue. The servers held up fine. But we did get a lot of traffic, and I'll give you the numbers in a little while. So some of the questions were, who is contributing to Wikipedia, and how are they contributing? And going into more detailed qualitative information that goes beyond the types of information we find in the logs, we're very interested in who is using Wikipedia and what value do they get out of Wikipedia. One question that everyone is interested in is quality. So what a survey allows us to do is look at the perception of quality, both from the reader side and the contributor side, and I'll have some things to say about that later. And then also there was an interest by the Wikimedia Foundation. They had some very particular questions that would help them make the user experience more efficient or understand how the readers of Wikipedia perceived them as an organization that was hosting the project, and questions around donations, etc. And then there is definitely also this idea that in a way we're creating a baseline that others can now run surveys a year from now and 5 years from now. We can see changes over time. So the questionnaire contains a little over 50 questions, but that's just the main questions. There are lots and lots of sub-questions under these main questions, and then it's broken down into different sections depending on if you're a reader, if you're a contributor, if you're an, we have a section for ex-contributors where we ask why did they stop contributing, for example. And 310,000 people roughly accessed the survey and started filling it out. About 179,000 finished filling out the survey. And we removed about 3,500 cases based on various relatively easy to identify patterns of vandalism. There is, as everyone who works on these surveys, there will always be a very small percentage of people who are trying to influence the results, but I think we have enough data points that we found most of the bad guys and took them out. We've started sharing some of the kind of short reports on particular issues. There's an overview that the Wikimedia Foundation put on their blog. There's a short report on non-contributors looking at women, people over 60, I think, and highly educated in particular. Why are they not contributing? Of the ones that are not contributing, why are they not contributing? And then also one on quality, and I'll speak about quality in a little bit. What are the next steps? So we are going to make the slides available, and they contain quite a lot of tables, not all of which I'm going to go through, but if you're interested in the data, there are some tables at the end that I won't even present here, but you can look at the data. We are going to make available the reports that we've shared with the Wikimedia Foundation so far, and we are also going to make available the lightly anonymized data set with the Wikimedia Foundation. Now, that data cannot be shared yet, but at least it allows the Wikimedia Foundation to run particular queries that they have, where maybe we are a little slow because we're interested in slightly different things, to run those things themselves. We're going to publish the comprehensive report in November, and we're going to make all of the data available, but in a more strongly anonymized form after we publish the report, so anyone can run regressions against the data. Next one, I think maybe I've talked about some of these. So there were 22 language versions of the survey, and we started with the largest language editions of Wikipedia, and then looked around also where would we find volunteers to translate the survey. Added those, and then picked a few where we were interested in the diversity, having sufficient diversity in the different language editions, so in terms of size, language, geographical distribution. What's quite interesting is that looking at this, so we have a number of variables. We have location, nationality, first language, etc. But if we look at the language edition, so the language that the survey was posted in, and also it's tied to the Wikipedia edition, so the Russian version of Wikipedia would link to the Russian version of the survey, then the Russian respondents make up the largest piece of the overall data set. And we were surprised by that, because the Russian Wikipedia is not the largest Wikipedia. Russia does not have the most connected population in the world, and we've looked at all kinds of ways to make sure that nobody is playing a trick on us here, and it seems that the findings are robust, so there are no obvious attempts at vandalism. We can't find common IP addresses that were used, and we've actually engaged with some of the Wikipedians from Russia who suggested certain things we should look for, and it seems robust. So this is definitely a surprising finding. The five top languages make up about 80% of the respondents, and we have very large numbers of responses in each of those languages, even going down. I think the smallest one is Afrikaans. We only have 14 data points. That's probably not enough to run very interesting studies, but for pretty much all of the others, we have sufficient amounts of responses. We've got responses from 231 countries. This is the question about what's your country of residence, where do you live? And Russia and Ukraine, not surprisingly, this time after the first one, are quite high there. But there are lots and lots of countries where we only have one reply. I see people smiling, so if you want to ask questions or make comments. That's possible. It's if you look at the survey, I can actually hold on. I shouldn't do this, but I believe we used any possible definition of what people could consider a country, and added them to the drop-down menu. And it's actually quite crazy if you look at some of those islands. I don't even know where half of them are. But if someone considers themselves to be a resident of a particular area of the world, they will find that area in the survey. So, so we ask people to self-identify as particular user types. Roughly 66% of the people who responded, it's the next slide, said that they were readers, so they were not contributing to Wikipedia in any way. Roughly 31% are contributors, and we distinguish occasional contributors and regular contributors, and then there are subcategories where people could say if they were authors, editors, administrators. And we also asked them if they were ex-contributors, and there are over 4,000 people who said they were ex-contributors, and there is some quite interesting information in what they have to say about leaving the community. And there are 1,900 people who say they have no more engagement with Wikipedia whatsoever, which is a little surprising since most of the people clicked on a link on the Wikipedia site, but nevertheless they feel very strongly that they are not using Wikipedia in any way. Just a little snippet I stuck in there. The contributors on average say that they spend about 4 hours per week contributing to Wikipedia, which I think is quite an astonishing amount of time if you aggregate it over the many, many thousands of people who participate. And we did some further categorization, which I can't go into now, based on the areas that they contribute to, et cetera. In terms of age, it's as we would expect. It's quite a young crowd that responded. About 25% of all responses fall between 18 and 22 years. Another 25 between 22 and 30. 18, 22, 22, 30, 30, 18. I think I'm 1, 2, 3. So we're missing 25%. I'm not sure where they went, but. Okay, sorry, yeah, we do have them back already. 18, 22, 22, 30, 85. So average age is about 25.22 years of all responses. Readers are a little bit younger than contributors, and women who replied are a little bit younger than men who replied. Now, because we have so much data, everything we find is statistically significant, but the differences are relatively small. What is more striking is the gender distribution. And if we look at other online surveys that have some technology focus, then we would expect to see more men reply than women. But the fact that only roughly 12.5% of all the contributors who replied were women, that is quite a strong difference. Maybe stronger than we had expected. A little over 30% of the readers who replied were women. But I want to go through these quite quickly. There are a lot of tables, and then rather speak about some of the more interesting things that come at the end. So the presentation will be made available to everyone. Fairly educated crowd. The contributors are slightly more educated. About 50% have some form of completed higher education, which is, I think, surprising given the relatively young age of the people who participated in the survey. So a fairly educated group of people. Okay, let's look at some of the more interesting things that people had to say. And often what I'm doing here is, I'm picking out certain data points from very, very large tables, and the tables are in the annex of the presentation. Some points that I find interesting, or that stand out rather from the analysis. So we asked people, what's your primary motivation to participate in or to contribute to Wikipedia? And asked them to rank the four most important reasons. And if you would rank it first, we would assign a value of 1, and if you would rank it 4, we would assign a value of 4. So what you see here is both the rank, the kind of aggregate rank of the scores, but also the number of people that mentioned this as a motivation. And the two that absolutely stand out, there are far more people mentioned them and give them a higher score than any of the others are. I like the idea of sharing knowledge and want to contribute to Wikipedia, and I saw an error I wanted to fix. And it's interesting because they are quite different. One is kind of a pragmatic, like, oh, there's something wrong, I'll quickly fix it reason. The other one is a much more substantial philosophical idea and belief in sharing that would motivate people. And so it'll be interesting to dig deeper on this to see if people might find an error and fix it, and that's how they get involved, and then they realize that this actually lets them realize that something that they believe in very strongly, you know, this is a perfect project to do this. The other two are the least mentioned ones. Very few people said that they participate or contribute to improve their job or career opportunities or to earn money. Money, and there was a point I wanted to make about that. Maybe it'll come back to me. What were some of the reasons for not contributing? So we asked people, why do you contribute? We also asked people who don't contribute, why do they not contribute? And the most mentioned reason was that people feel they don't have enough information to contribute, and that they're happy to just read it, and they don't really see a need to write it. There's quite a big gap between those two and the others. And I've added some here that are a little more complex, but still you see that about a quarter of the people who answered this question did say that they're not comfortable editing other people's work, or that they're afraid of making a mistake and getting in trouble for it, which it's quite astonishing for me, because the whole ethos around Wikipedia, as I perceive it, is that it's very friendly. This is a great place. Everyone can contribute. So it was surprising to me that at least 25% of the people who don't contribute, who responded to this survey, feel that there is a level of control and getting in trouble, a possibility of getting in trouble. We also asked them, well, what could the community or the project do to make it more likely that you will contribute in the future? And the most prominent one was that people were wanted information on which areas they should contribute to. Temu. You could select as many as you wanted. Yeah. Yeah, no, they don't add up to 100%. There was a long list, and then you could select as many as you wanted. And you didn't have to rank them either. I thought this was quite interesting also from the perspective of the community. You know, would it make sense to identify and point out certain topics that need outside help, so that it's easier for people who come to the site to see, oh, actually they're looking for particular help in my area of expertise, I'll have a quick look at what I can contribute. We've also looked at, you must give me a warning if I'm running out of time, okay? I've got two more sections which I'd like to talk about. One is to do with the focus areas and the expertise levels. This is not an unproblematic question, because we use the categories that are listed on the English Wikipedia, and there are some limitations to the use of those categories, which the Wikimedia Foundation made very clear to us, but it was the best solution we could find together. So one limitation is that not everyone uses those categories or is even aware of those categories, that where certain articles would fall into. And then also in the translation to other language sites, they don't necessarily have the same categories. They might have fewer or more. And so there are some limitations, and one has to be, we will spend more time looking at the details of this. But I can present kind of the overall findings, that for all the contributors to all of the language sites, culture and arts was the we asked people which categories do you contribute, and the largest share of people who replied said they were contributing to culture and the arts, which was a little surprising because, or maybe to me as someone who's not a part of the community, because I definitely had this idea that it was more around the technical and scientific topics. The quality reviews that we know of are usually speaking about the high quality in the technical articles, in the scientific articles. They don't often speak about the culture and the arts articles. So that was interesting. Technology and applied sciences was the second most popular. We're still on the right one. But then history and geography. So the first four, three are non-technical. We also asked people, which areas do you contribute to, and would you consider yourself an expert in this area? And we gave them three options for being an expert. One, you could be an expert if you studied the topic. You could be an expert if you have significant work experience in the area, or other, because we felt by restricting it to the kind of institutionalized expertise credentials, we would be almost counter the model of Wikipedia. So there is a third option. People are maybe not very reliable when they consider, when they speak about their own expertise, so we have to take that into account. But the shares of contributors who consider, who say they have a level of expertise in the areas that they contribute to, is incredibly high. And the highest share of experts, we find them in the technical and scientific fields. So there is no direct correspondence between which are the most popular fields and which are the fields that attract the highest share of experts. And here's the whole table, which is probably a bit overwhelming to look at, but the first column is the number of contributors. So of all of our contributors who selected categories, and there are also multiple categories are possible here. You see that culture and the arts has over 20,000 contributors, and mathematics and logic only 6,300. And then on the far right, we see the level of experts. And so the maths, over 90% of the people would consider themselves experts. Perceptions of quality. So we also asked about quality because it's, for me, it is one of the most interesting aspects of Wikipedia. How is it possible that something that anyone can edit can produce such high quality? And we asked the perceptions of the people who responded, both the readers and the contributors, in five dimensions of quality: reliability, broadness, variety, depth, six, understandability, and timeliness. And we explained what they mean, and I'm going to show you three of these, but the only category where, we asked about perception of quality to rank your impression of the quality as very high, high, medium, low, very low, but also then in comparison to a traditional encyclopedia. So it was quite a complex question. It's easier to look at the way the next one, the way this comes out. So reliability is the only dimension of quality where the traditional encyclopedia was rated higher by both the contributors as well as the readers. But what's interesting to me is that if you only look at the leftmost bar of these two bar plots, the very high one, then the difference between very high scores, percentage of responses for the very high score, is smaller for the readers as it is for the contributors, which would indicate that the contributors are more critical regarding the reliability of the information than the readers are, which is quite mind-boggling, I think, or at least initially. There are possible explanations around being familiar with the processes might improve your understanding, which might lead to a more critical view. The interesting thing is, though, that the contributors are both more critical here, but they are also more supportive in the areas where, for example, the next one, where Wikipedia is rated higher than a traditional encyclopedia. So the difference between, here again, just the very high ones, now the contributors, again, the difference is higher, but now in the positive sense. So they are both more critical, but also they argue more strongly that the quality is higher in the areas where they consider it to be higher. So in all of the other dimensions, Wikipedia was rated higher by both readers and contributors. I think the, what was the last one we took, Variety. So this is actually not the, the highest score for Wikipedia is timeliness. But I picked three, which are kind of the, show you the variety. But yeah, it went, my bar plot was too small for the perception of quality. So there is a lot of data around quality in there. We've got these different dimensions, contributors and readers. You could look at these scores in all kinds of different ways. We've also calculated mean values and differences between means, but if this is an area you're working in, you know the issues around working with means. So I think I said these things already, and I think that's it. Yeah, I've got two more long tables in the annex, which we don't have to look at, but if we have time for questions, for also for my co-presenter, I think I'd rather use the time for questions.
A question to our second speaker. If you could if you could advise the management of Wikipedia to make changes as a result of your survey, what advice would you give?
Should we collect more questions or? It's really difficult to reply because I don't feel like I'm I can present the results of this survey. I think it is more useful if the Wikimedia, and this is a partly political answer, but I think it is more useful if the community, because these findings will be published together with the management, draw the conclusions from this, because I am there's only so much you can see as someone who isn't part of the community and who isn't involved in this project on a daily basis. I think one of the things that are clear from this, kind of the pragmatic issues around identifying areas that people should be, or that the project is looking for contributions. I mean, there's a range of those. There are some things around donations where people say, a surprisingly large percentage of people say, they don't know how to donate, or no one's ever asked them for a donation. Now that's really surprising to me, and I know the Wikimedia Foundation is able to raise an incredible amount of small donations, which I think is a huge success, but if you still have 20 or 30% of the people who don't know that there's a possibility to donate, then you are losing out on potentially huge amounts of money that could come from the community that don't have to be raised through grants. And so those would be two things, but I would prefer to stick to the pragmatic findings. I think probably the community and the management are better able to make the draw the conclusions on what they could change than I would be.
Philip, I'd like to ask I'd like to ask why is it taking 1 year, plan to take 1 year to release the raw data to the community? Aren't we talking about crowd, wisdom of crowd and transparency? And wouldn't the community be able to empower to try to look for their own findings?
Yeah, I wish we didn't have time for questions. it's again going to be a, so there's a pragmatic side to this. One is we never expected to receive this amount of responses. And the way the collaboration was structured was that the United Nations University funded the work and the Wikimedia Foundation provided in-kind support, and also we could have never done it without the foundation. So, but the time and the work was funded by the United Nations University, and so the kind of the benefit of that is that you get to publish the first report, right? And before we can share the data, we need to anonymize it. And if when we were thinking about maybe 5,000 responses, anonymizing that is a fairly easy task. Now we're talking about 175,000 responses. So there's an aspect of it's just much more work than we expected. And then there is an aspect that we are finishing up the report now that we would like to publish and then look at sharing the data after that. But we are making available the kind of slightly anonymized version to the Wikimedia Foundation now by the end of August. So please, no more hard questions.
Yeah, I'm willing to answer any questions.
Hard questions for him.
An easy one. Yeah.
You said you were talking about people who are leaving community.
Yeah.
What is the greatest reason why people would leave Wikipedia or Wikimedia?
So it's a much smaller subsample, and it's difficult to say how representative their opinions are, but also how representative all of this is, because it is an online survey with a self-selected group of people. But there definitely is quite a strong sense of frustration with contributions being reversed or deleted, and people are, and so I've started reading through a lot of the open-ended questions, which provide much more useful information for this group. And people are saying that I am an expert in this area, but some person, and it's usually some person, there's this aspect of this anonymous person always reverts my edits and says, I don't know what I'm talking about. And so there's definitely a sense of that. And it would be useful, I think, to look at how, I think it's partly misperception of the process where people just don't know what is expected of them, and they don't understand how to find that out, and they don't want to engage to find it out. And partly it is a clash over decisions around articles. So, but yeah, I would say that is the most common. There is also people say they don't have time anymore, but the kind of more interesting one is obviously the issue of being unhappy with the way the community receives the contributions.
I noticed at the beginning you excluded the under 18s from this survey, which it makes for a very interesting skew on this. And do you think that's why the arts and culture bit wound up with such a low percentage, considering how big Pokemon and manga and so on are within Wikipedia?
We excluded the under 18s for, when we looked at the data, obviously there's an ethical issue, but we do have people who said that they were younger than 18 in the sample. But we also cut off at 85. We also have people who said they were older than 85. But the amount of vandalism in those two groups was so dominant that it was it made more sense to exclude them. But with respect to the question about culture and the arts, we actually have most of the people said they were contributing to culture and the arts. So it's the opposite. It's the level of expertise is lower than in maths and the other categories. But of all the people who considered themselves contributors and responded, the largest number said they were contributing to culture and the arts. Well, yes, these are only the people who replied to the survey. So, and we could have a conversation about how representative that is. There are definitely limitations. But I would say that the contributors' data is more representative and reliable, certainly than the readers' data. Because especially in some language communities, we actually have so many people who consider themselves contributors that it's a fair share of the overall contributor community, not in the English Wikipedia, obviously, but in some of the others. But maybe, I mean, this sounds like an interesting topic. Maybe we should, or maybe I'm not fully understanding the question. We should continue it afterwards.
Okay, I'll pass on to you.
So in the reasons people contribute to Wikipedia, it was great to see that the two top reasons were basically reasons for the greater good, information sharing. And the reasons people don't, you, people didn't list were making money. That was obvious. But what about things that people do things for selfish reasons? I think one of the reasons I contribute to wikis and a lot of other people do is because it's fun. Like, where did that stack up?
We didn't ask specific. Well, we actually did have a question. Let me just. I'm just going to look at some of my. This isn't in the presentation, but. So just some of the others, I'll just run through them as I. A small group of people said they were just checking if it was really open for anyone to edit. That was their main motivation. There was a question about because friends of mine are doing it and motivated me to join. There was a question about the reputation in the Wikipedia community, but I think the one about fun is probably most closely related to the idea of sharing knowledge and want to contribute it. There are some others around the greater good, like I want to demonstrate my knowledge to a wider public and community. Actually, let me rephrase my answer there. So I think there are two things to keep in mind. One is people are relatively bad at identifying motivations for their own actions, and they are likely to overstate the greater good than the selfish reasons. And we do find that here, that the selfish reasons, money, job, reputation, are fairly low represented. We don't have a question exactly about fun, which would be interesting to add, but maybe, I mean, if you want to speak to me a little more maybe afterwards, we could try to define fun as different aspects of, and I guess that sounded wrong, but... please. That's interesting. Well, I'd love to see the findings from your study, and maybe if we can, if you have any qualitative data around people explaining what they mean by fun, I'd love to see if we can find some of the options here, and who are the people that would respond, it's fun, and just dig a little deeper there. I think it would have been nice, obviously, if we had exactly the same option, I could now say, yes, the people did it for fun as well. Yeah.
I would like to know if there were any questions where you found significant differences between the individual languages.
My colleague Rüdiger is actually working on a report on language differences. The only one I've looked at in some detail is with the Russians, because we ran all of this analysis for everyone except the Russians, and then we added the Russians afterwards. And the differences were very small. So between everyone and the Russians tend to be a little bit younger, a little bit in our sample, have slightly lower levels of education, but the kind of overall similarities are very, very high. I think we will see greater diversion for the smaller language communities who might be at an earlier stage of development. And but so one of the reports that's going to come out is exactly on that.
My question is for Sorin. I would like to know which data mining software was used for the analysis, for the data mining analysis of the information to generate the graphics and the statistics. Was it used, the colleges have done the algorithms, or was proprietary software being used?
Yeah, we used RYO software, roll your own. We basically got a TerraGrid allocation. TerraGrid is a computer network of supercomputers. My colleague David Brown wrote the data analysis algorithm. So
thank you.
Unfortunately, it's not open source, but we are working on a project that would, if we get the dump, that would make the dump publicly accessible to researchers who can write scripts such as Python and then throw it at it.
Okay. Thank you.
Another question? No? Well, thank you a lot. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for.